my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to all listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, our good friend and one of our original supporters of the podcast, The Comics Emotion, and a great contributor to that channel, Mr. Tony Farina, one of our patrons as well. He's been a massive supporter of us and a great friend, as we all know, has picked a movie that I was actually going to pick, Dave. It was on my extensive list, so it's actually saved me a pick. So we are going back, Dave, to 1993, which when we were talking about it last week, I thought it was later in the 90s, and it's Arnie. I'd probably still say he's peaked. He'd been off the back of Terminator 2. He said this last week. But we are going to be doing, Dave, Last Action Hero. So where do you remember this one?
So I remember seeing this one on the video, but it was hugely hyped at the time, wasn't it? It was massive, you know. And Arnie, if you go from the mid-80s when he'd done things like Terminator, you know, very much kind of lower budget indie movies, and then obviously it got bigger and bigger in 91. You had Terminator 2. That was pretty huge. But then by the time this comes around, he's just a massive megastar, isn't he? And so the hype for it was through the roof. And honestly, Chris, I remember watching it and I was kind of lukewarm to it. And I think watching it this time, I realize why. I think there's a couple of things going on here. I think one, the whole kind of meta awareness. I mean, it's like what Scream did 3 years later, wasn't it? You know, in terms of that meta awareness of horror movies. Well, this is that meta awareness of action movies. But where I think the real misstep is here is that it's a PG, isn't it? Or in America, it would have been a PG-13. Whereas your action movies, you're expecting them to be R-rated. You know, like Lethal Weapon as well, that's an 18 in the UK, isn't it? Predator that we did last week, you know, that was an 18. So I think the fact that they had to tone it right down as well on the violence, the language, and blood and gore and stuff, I think that's probably what... I just had me wondering, you know, if this was all that good. So I haven't seen this that many times because I never really fancied going back and watching it, you know. So, and Arnie still had plenty of movies come after this. I mean, he went through a bit of a comedy phase, didn't he? I think Junior came after this as well, you know. But it was Batman and Robin a good few years after this, wasn't he? So, you know, he'd done plenty of stuff after, but I think this... If you look back, you know, for me, this was probably the peak of his stardom, you know, in terms of being that Hollywood A-lister. And then it's probably faded off a little bit after this, I would say. But yeah, very lukewarm on it first time around, Chris, and just haven't gone back at all.
Well, for me, Dave, I actually had this on video. So I mean, I own this, definitely did. I think the VHS cover is quite iconic as well. Proper pop culture one. You know, very cartoony and it almost computer game-like as well. And I think it was computer games born off the back of it. But I genuinely, genuinely enjoyed this. But like you, I've not watched it for years. And that says a lot, really. It's sort of like, well, why have I not watched it? It's not one of Arnie's best movies. But it's also one I've not seen. I've not seen this for over 25 years at least, Dave, it must be. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I bought it. I don't necessarily think I've only watched it once. So, and I knew it got absolutely panned. I knew it got absolutely slated for this movie. It was somewhat completely different. Like you say, the comedy stuff, you've got like Jingle All the Way as well, things like I did in the 90s. It did go down a bit of a rabbit hole of these comedies. But watching it this time, and like I say, with fresh eyes to it, I was quite interested to see what you think, Dave. I'm not revealing my hand just yet, but yeah, what you think, because there's loads of pop culture references in this movie that if you blink, you'd miss it. Really, really good spots as well.
Yeah, I think we're going to play a little bit of poker here, aren't we? But Chris, should we get into our trailer?
Let's go.
A great classic
comes to the screen.
Take thy hand, fair prince.
Who said I'm fair? To be or not to be? Not to be.
Columbia Pictures is proud to present the screen's greatest action hero, Jack Slater.
Slater!
Don't even think of Slater, you hear me?
This is the Lieutenant Governor.
Slater, here's what I...
The Governor gets here, call me.
And Danny Madigan is his biggest fan.
Jack Slater 4.
But tonight, a magic ticket...
It's a passport to another world.
Will get Danny closer to the action than anyone ever dreamed.
Holy cow! I'm in the movie!
Who the hell are you?
Don't shoot me! I'm Danny Madigan, I'm a kid!
And you're going with him.
Who is this twerp? And where is that smile on his face?
I don't even know this kid.
To a world that's bigger than life.
This ticket... It's magic, and it really works.
And better than real.
You really believe that you're inside a movie, don't you?
Yes! The bad guys are in there. I've seen it. On screen.
Could I speak to the drug dealer of the house, please?
Have a nice day.
Have him killed.
This summer, it's head-on thrills.
I have killed people smarter and younger than you.
Head first, excitement.
I hate when it happens.
He's got the ticket.
Now I possess power, real power.
He's going over to my world.
In this world, the bad guys can win.
The door must still be open, come on.
If I go, how do I get back?
And it's coming at you from both sides of the screen.
Where am I now?
This isn't the movies anymore, Jack. Please be careful. Things were different here.
Damn it, that hurt.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is Jack Slater.
No!
This hero stuff has its limits.
And Jack Slater is...
Everybody down! Down!
The last action hero. The big ticket for 93.
I'll be back. Ha! You did not gonna say that, did you?
That's what you always say.
I do?
10-year-old boy Danny Madigan lives in a crime-ridden area of New York City with his widowed mother, Irene. Following his father's death, Danny takes comfort in watching action movies, especially a series featuring LA cop Jack Slater, a movie theater owned by Nick, who's a projectionist. Nick gives Danny a golden ticket, once owned by Harry Houdini, to see an early screening of Jack Slater 4 before its official release. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, Dave, the golden ticket thing's not exactly original, is it? So there's pop culture references, but I don't necessarily think that was one. You know what, Dave? Watching it this time with fresh eyes, I actually was surprised, like, how many things... I remember, like, different things with the characters of Jack Slater, knowing that they were breaking the fourth wall down. You know, this kid's, you know, he's a lonely kid and he's just him and his mum, this guy. A little bit. I suppose in some respects, we've done a few movies like this. You look at stuff like, slightly different, but stuff like Big, or like I did Mr. Destiny, you know, he changes it. He's like a golden, you know, he has a glass of milk, you know, James Belushi, and he changes and all that, you know, wakes up the next day. Slightly different, but you've got that magic feel of it. But I remember at the time, the pretense of watching the trailers when they rented out, going, this looks absolutely amazing. And Arnie's playing it for laughs. He's playing... himself, the absolute kick-ass character and everything. But I just wasn't sure this time what I thought of it. However, Dave, I actually enjoyed this because I was like, oh, I can get on board with this. I can think watching it now, 25 years later, or whenever I first watched it, I didn't necessarily enjoy it, even though I bought it on VHS. But this time I thought it was quite good. I think it's like it misses the mark maybe years ago. But for me, it doesn't. I think like, I can understand why it's got a following again. And I genuinely, I'm jumping already, but I would watch this again because I just love the fact that physics ridiculous. The kids there trying to explain you in a movie. Everything's happening. There's so many cliches. And I think it's relevant to all the films that we cover, all the action movies and everything, all like the cliches are in there that we talk about when we're watching a serious movie, where you've got like, you know, the sergeant or the captain who just shouts all the time and he's kicking off, you know, like he's been in loads of films. He's great in this, but that whole shtick again in it, the glass is broken. It's almost, I'd say at times this verges on sort of like Naked Gun, you know, like the piss taking and that. But I really enjoy it, Dave. I've got to say, I was very, very surprised watching it this time.
Yeah, it is enjoyable, isn't it? And I do feel like it was probably too soon. You know, Arnie was still in his kind of heyday, wasn't he, when this came out? Whereas I think the context of watching it, you know, years after he's kind of faded out, you know, he's back in movies now, isn't he? But, you know, he'd obviously been a politician for a few years. He seems one of those characters who, you know, he sets his mind on something and then he goes about trying to achieve it. And the things that he's done in the past, he's less kind of concerned about those. But I guess the only thing for me is I definitely got the big reference, you know, they had that big kind of feel to it. And I just lament the fact a little bit that it was pitched more as like a kid's film, because I think it could have been even better. Because if you think about it, all of the action movies that they're referencing, they're all R-rated films. You know, and you've got this 10-year-old kid. Again, it's like being blatant about, you know, age ratings and our loose approach to them, because the kid's 10, but he's watching all these R-rated movies. So, you know, probably wouldn't be the same. Well, yeah, again, you can see yourself in that. But, you know, looking back, you're like, yeah, maybe wouldn't do that now. But, Chris, what did you reckon to that theatre, though? I mean, for me, this film as well, one of the other reasons why I suspect it didn't land as well is this was 93, but it's like 2 hours, isn't it, around about? And 90 minutes, we always say, is that kind of sweet spot for your 80s, 90s action flick. But this is a little bit long, and I think this could be cut shorter, because you're like 20 minutes into the movie before you get to the moment where he jumps into the movies, doesn't he? You know, and obviously it happens with this Harry Houdini ticket thing. I'm not sure how I feel about that. But in what has got to be the worst cinema in the world, you know, there's graffiti everywhere. Chris, I bet it stunk. You know, it was just so run down. I'm surprised it still had electricity. Like, you might have overdone it on the overrun thing, you know, and run down in prime New York there.
Yeah, but also, David, it feels like one of the fucking porn ones, doesn't it, where everyone's wanking in the corner or something. You know, like one of them. Like, proper shit, isn't it? And I agree. The Harry Houdini thing makes no sense, because he's not like a master illusionist. He's a escape artist, didn't he, Harry Houdini? You know what I mean? He did stunts and stuff like that. Like, why would he have a golden ticket to transport you into the movies? That makes no fucking sense whatsoever. But we go with Harry Houdini. That's fine. And I agree. You know, I've criticised a few movies recently where I say, if we just had another 10 minutes of, like, ground laying, we've gone into it too quick. But I agree. This is too slow, and it really is too slow. Like, I talked about Big Dinner. Big literally happens immediately. Still a great film, but immediately he's literally becomes the adult overnight. There's a couple of things. He can't get on a fairground ride. He can't get the girl. Something about his height. That's it. Right. I want to be big. Okay, then. Next day he wakes up. This is within 10 minutes of the movie started. So that's too soon for me. However, this does go on for too long. But I think once we get into the film world, I absolutely loved it. I've got to say, I love the fact that no matter how many people he shot, there's no blood. I know, like you said, it's an R-rated, you know, it should be an R-rated movie, because the prefix in a lot of the old, like, Terminator and different movies like Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, these Beverly Hills Cop references there. But I do think that I love watching what they did. There's some clever, clever things that's like basic, like we always say, and you've said loads of times, right? It's plot armor. It's movie armor. Even when the kid is like trying to break it all down. I loved it. I love when he meets Jack and the chasing, and he goes like, he even goes over the fucking bridge in the Terminator, you know, when the Terminator's chasing him on the motorbike and he jumps over there. Like he's almost taking the piss out of himself. And then you got Al Young there, Dave, as well, the old classic who's in Lethal Weapon and everything, the old henchman, he's one of the baddies.
Mm.
And you've got all these references. I just thought he was great. I genuinely did. And I love like the story of when the kid's telling him different things and then like about the captain and he's going, you said you never say anything. And he's like, I haven't, because he knows all the movies and the plots and that. So for me, I honestly, I probably enjoyed it.
Yeah, the bit where he said, you said you wouldn't tell anyone about that. I didn't tell anyone. You know? I thought that was amazing. And the guy playing the angry captain, just absolutely perfect. And the fact that as we've gone through all these various action movies on this podcast and we've commented on things like that, and these guys are literally, you know, it's a wink to the camera, isn't it? It's like we know these are all the tropes and we're just going to call them all out. Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was a real surprise watch. There was something in the back of my mind that made me think, I wonder, you know, if this is just one of those that's a little bit before its time, but I remembered very little about the movie other than the basic kind of premise of it and, you know, what we saw in the trailer. So, yeah, I don't think it's a perfect movie by any stretch. I think, like I say, I think if it was R-rated, I think if it was a bit shorter, they could have made it better. But you say about the cameos, obviously we had Oddjob there, didn't we?
Yeah.
Tina Turner rocks up. We had Jim Belushi.
Yeah.
I like that line, actually. What was it he said? He said, you know, is the woman he was with, so she gets really horny around Arnold, and when that happens, I just want to be there. But I tell you who I think steals the show, Chris, Charles Dance as Benedict. I think he is your Hans Gruber. He just steals the show for me. I thought right from the start, you can see he's that kind of henchman with the, you know, he changes his, got his different eyes or eyeballs in there. And you've got the sort of mafia boss, and he's just so like grumpy about him and stuff. I thought he was fantastic throughout.
He is. He's very good. And I will say, Dave, what gets me is when the kid, Danny's like having a pop at him just before they go and meet like Charles Dance's character, Mr. Benedict, is when they're in the fucking precincts and you've got like, obviously Danny DeVito is Whiskers, isn't he? He's the cop. And he's like, we've even got an animated cop. But it's the way that the lieutenant and that are like having a go, how do you know all these things? Well, this person did this and this is what happened and they did this and your wife's, you know, and then he just sort of goes, right, you're his new, meet your new partner.
Yeah.
And even Danny doesn't twig. He's now become part of the movie. He's like a 10-year-old kid. He's now the partner of fucking Jack Slater, this all conquering cop. So I do like that. And I love when he gets dusted up, Jack. The next scene, his fucking clothes are immaculate. I mean, non-sports, yeah. And I'm jumping him at the tar. That's fucking brilliant. He's fucking brilliant. But
got like a little napkin, hasn't he, to wipe himself up with.
So good. It's so good. But when you're right, though, when they go to like Vivaldi's house and Benedict's there and he's got the old fucking acid fucking thing in it, the bloody little yellow smiley face in his eye. And then a classic movie is he leaves the door ajar as Danny's like revealing all these things because he knows it's part of the movie. I honestly just went with it. It's ridiculous, but I just love the fact that Slater's car never gets damaged. He hits everything. And he mean reverses into everything. He's knocking fucking statues over. Next minute, there's not a fucking scratch on the car. There's just little things like that, which I appreciate now more than I did when I first watched it.
Yeah. And I love Chris when they go to Blockbusters. And, you know, he's trying to prove that they're in a movie. And you've got a poster for T2 there. and it's got Sly in. I'd completely forgot about that. I was trying to think. I guess they'd buried the hatchet by this point because there was a bit of a needle between the pair of them, wasn't there? But obviously they'd sort of set up Planet Hollywood by this point and were getting on. So, yeah, I'd completely forgotten about that. So that was a great surprise.
It was brilliant. And I remember at the time like being like, oh my God, what's he doing? But then also in that same scene, Danny says to him, you know we're in a movie because look at the women, and then this absolutely stunning woman goes past bouncing Dave, shall we say. And then you've just, and all the women are dressed, to be fair, I don't know about you, Dave, but all the women were dressed like in Back to the Future 2. You know when he goes to 2015 and you've got them like weird outfits on and they're all stunning. It reminded me of that, a bit like Griff's fucking henchwoman who's there, like the way they were dressed and everything. But again,
I was thinking Fifth Element.
Well, yeah, you could be right, Fifth Element. I was probably even more plausible, but I just love what they did, the aesthetics of it, and like Danny's there trying to narrate the story to Jack, saying, you know, you're in a film, he's having none of it. But then when Jack goes home and you've got this big monster truck and his fucking daughter comes and plants the lips on fucking Danny, and I'm like, and then she's like, yeah, I've been dared by the fresh. There's no way that would have passed nowadays. Not a chance.
I remember when we were watching the trailer last week and you're like, ooh, Helga. it's just a dream. This was what I was hoping would happen. But I don't suppose you recognised her, but she was Sonya Blade 2 years later in Mortal Kombat.
I, you know what, Dave? I didn't look. I knew I recognised her. I just didn't know who she was. Because she's a little bit Alicia Silverstone about her.
Yeah. But and she was a good character as well, wasn't she? And it was quite sad in a way, wasn't it? Because when they go back to his apartment, you know, and you can see this thing right by the highway, there's no furniture or anything in there. There's a ninja waiting in the closet. He's always there. Cost me a fortune. And the thing is, the quips and the little nods and pop culture references, they come so thick and fast. I am going to have to watch this a few more times to try and pick up more of them because they were coming so fast. You know, you probably miss a lot of them. But yeah, I did like when, like you say, when Helga made a show in there. Even she was quite. She wasn't a damsel in distress, was she? Because when old Benedict turns up with his henchmen and mob there, you know, they go to slap her around, and then she does the old screaming to hide that she's actually the one doing the beating up kind of thing. And again, physics goes out the window the way she's kind of throwing this guy around. But yeah, I thought she was a good little side character as well.
You know what though, David? I agree, because I think being Jack Slater's daughter, she's got to be tough, hasn't she? And he even says it, doesn't he? He says like, yeah, she was there thinking guns. Why couldn't she be like a normal girl? But when that fight scene happens, right, and she levers the guy and then Jack, you know, he takes names. I love the way that like Jack fucking jumps off the side of the apartment like he's a fucking gymnast, and he's like pirouetting, he's fucking flipping over the side down in the hills of Beverly Hills and that. It's fucking stupid, but it's absolutely what would happen in a movie, isn't it? You know, that like ridiculous fucking plot armor that they can do anything. It's so silly.
You know, some of them are so blatant, some of the nods, they're right on the nose. But one that really made me laugh was, again, when they're in the in his ex-wife's house, and again, when they're going up to the house, he's sort of saying, isn't he, that your ex-wife's not here, she's not in the credits. So he knows she's not going to be in that movie. But it's when he's saying, oh, take the money, saying to Benedict, it's like, and then one of the guys goes over, he says, oh, there's over $2,000 here or something. And he says, give them here. These are marked bills. And they throw them in the fire. And then he throws them in the fire, which only creates this big plume of smoke, which warns Jack that there's someone in the house. I was thinking that the leaps to get there, the fact that you're asking him to take the money, but also you're hoping that he notices that they're marked bills and then he's going to say, throw them in the fire. I was just like, yeah, perfect action movie stuff.
Yeah, but we bought that shit up, didn't we? In a lot of movies, you get that little plot setting, don't you, early on, and then you think, I think that's going to come back later and fucking be part of the movie. Whereas this is just taking the piss in it front and center. And I do like when when they go to the fucking funeral of that fucking gangster, and basically Jack sat there and deduces that they've put fucking explosives inside fucking, is it called fart as well, the guys? Fart or something like that.
It got a bit, it was something like Louis the Fart, wasn't it? And yeah, because it was like, you know what this means? Louis the Fart is going to pass gas for the last time.
Yeah, I was just like, and he deduces that in the card and he comes up this whole plot in his head and that's what we're going with at the funeral. And it's just, it's fuck, that bit is silly. And you've got all the Italian mafia there, Dave. Even the granny is...
Yeah, the granny's having Uzi and stuff.
And then what makes you laugh is that, again, plot armor, he's the hero, Jack. When he picks up the guy and runs and he smacks a couple of them, and then you've got Danny in the actual crane and he takes out all the mafia, it's when he's jumping down that fucking water feature and they must have fired about 300 bullets and not one of them hits him, does it? And he's like pirouetting and jumping across like the sun lounges and then jumps over. And I'm laughing to myself going, you know what? I wouldn't have even thought twice of like John McClane or fucking.
Yeah.
You know, I watched Lethal Weapon the other day to start my Christmas movies, and I'm thinking, some of the shit in that Mel Gibson doesn't get shot is unbelievable. Like when they torture him and everything, it's like, you just shot them both dead. You know, you wouldn't have, we need to find out what information, you know, why? Just kill him. But obviously that's part of the movie. But it's in this.
Sorry, my favorite bit is still where he's lying on the floor, shooting ahead, and then he's sort of doing sideways roly-polies along the floor.
Hey, stop it.
You're actually there with a gun, and you're just looking across, you know, 20 yards away at this person doing that. It's like, what are you doing? It looks brilliant. It looks absolutely brilliant, but it is as nonsense as something in this movie, isn't it?
You know how many times I've done that fucking roll when it gets to Christmas trees with my brothers? You know, like, we get on the floor and do that roly-poly. You'd be like, how the fuck does he do that? You know, like, thinking it's real. And really, it is just like you said, he just come up to him and fucking shot him in the head, one of you, and gone, well, you're not doing that again. So, yeah, I'm with you. But it's still a fucking great film, though. And it's got to be elevated to a Christmas movie at the same level as Die Hard. It's getting a bit of recognition this year, Lethal Weapon.
But, I wonder why it doesn't.
Weird, isn't it? It's more Christmassy than Die Hard, to be honest. But the setting is, maybe it's because the weather's now, I don't know. It's in LA as well, to be fair, because obviously Die Hard is. So I've actually got over my shoulder while we're recording. I've got Die Hard 2 paused, Dave. We're about halfway through at the moment. So I fucking love that movie. It's so good. I know we covered it last year. But anyway, back to this, Dave. But yeah, I've got to say, when Benedict realizes there's some sort of golden ticket and there's a portal, you're like, how is this going to work? And I think it gets even better. And there's not long. So you're about the 20-minute situation at the start. We don't get to go through to the real world till about 1 hour 15 into this movie. It's longer than that, I think. The movie's 130 minutes. It's 2 hours 10. I think we don't get an hour in the real world. I think we get about 35, 40 minutes in the real world. I think it's longer than that before we transition over. So I think you're right about it dragging on, but I think when it goes into the real world, it then becomes even better for me because Jack Slater's playing himself. But what makes me laugh, Dave, nobody notices that Arnold Schwarzenegger's running around fucking New York.
Yeah.
Nobody. You know what I mean? It's bullshit, and nobody even cottons on that it's Arnie. It's just bizarre. But other than that, I just go with it.
Yeah, I love, again, for me, Benedict is the scene sealer. And when he actually shoots the mechanic and he realizes there's no police sirens, no one's running to try and stop him or anything. And he's like, I shot somebody. and I did it on purpose. Just like, it was amazing. And so apparently, you know, Chris, when Charles Dance signed up to do this movie, he wasn't the first choice. So the first choice was Alan Rickman. But apparently he was too expensive. So on the first day of shooting, Charles Dance came to the set wearing a T-shirt which said, "I'm cheaper than Alan Rickman." which I think is fair enough. But yeah, so it could have been Hans Gruber who was playing this this Benedict character.
And you know what, Dave? That would have made more sense because of him off the back of Last Action... of Die Hard. Obviously, I know Charles Dance was in The Golden Child, which I owned on video and watched it about 3 or 4 times. Fucking hated it as a kid. But I did end up
porridge,
getting
it.
Yeah, the porridge. And then the water, where he can't spill the water. I don't know. I've not seen it for ages. I know it's got like that science fiction fucking bit to it and stuff at the end, which just does me head in. But yeah, the porridge bit's minging. But anyway, Charles Dance, yeah, I can buy him as a baddie. I think you're right. He's really good. But I think as well, there's still good bits in this movie. I think Arnie's great. I think he's like so underrated. He's absolutely ripped up in this. And he's just come off that, you know, he's still in that Terminator shape. He still looks amazing. And when he meets Danny's mum, fucking hell, Dave, he has got eyes on. They're in the smallest kitchen ever, aren't they? It's like fucking.
I thought that as well. Yeah. Because I know they're supposed to be down on their luck, aren't they? But I was thinking, and Arnie's pretty huge, isn't he? He's sort of tucked away in the corner there. But even if it was a regular sized person, that kitchen would be ridiculously small. I think in the TV, it kind of hides how small things are. But I was thinking even the set must have been absolutely tiny there.
Yeah, 100%. But I did love Dave. I love that bit with the mum when Danny's talking and then Jack looks at his mum and looks at Danny as if to say, "I am going to nail her, mate." You know what I mean? He's like, there's a really weird look Arnie gives to the mum. And I'm like, oh, right, here we go. He was as if to say to Danny, "I'm going to be your father now, son. Come here." seedy look.
You know, I don't know. I couldn't quite get in my head what was happening there because we'd seen him be quite, so Jack Slater, we'd seen him be quite, almost borderline sleazy with the ladies, wasn't he? When they were in the Blockbusters, and he was saying, "No, you were in that movie," and then the hot Blockbusters ladies like, "Oh, you're in a movie?" And says, "Yes, and you were there. It was called The Story of My Life," or something like that. And then they do the whole thing with the numbers, don't they? Oh yeah, it's 555. Like everyone's number always starts with 555 in action movies. So I think he was genuinely interested in his mum. And the whole kind of plot, you've got basically the mum has lost her husband, you know, the kid's lost his dad, but also Jack lost his son. So you've got this perfect coming together of this like little family unit. So I think he was not sort of like eyeing up his mum in a sleazy way. I think it was more that he'd never really had a real sort of conversation with a woman before. It was all on screen in movie stuff, you know, and so, you know, flirting and what have you. So that's what I think was going on there.
And to be fair, there is dialogue where he says that. I've never actually spoken to a woman. He does say that, doesn't he? It was just for me, Dave. You know what I'm like? I'm just thinking, oh, good old Jack wants a speeded way with Danny's mum. Shut the door behind you,
say
son.
Be out Arnold Braunschweiger.
But she doesn't even cotton that he's fucking Arnie.
Yeah, either. Like biggest, you know, movie star.
Yeah, biggest movie star in the world. And it's like, you know, she doesn't even twig that this guy's in the kitchen. No, not even a mention going, "God, you don't half look like Arnold Schwarzenegger and sound like him, Dave." You know what I mean? So anyway. But I'm with you. And when we get to the premiere, which is around like Times Square and everything, you get the real Arnie with Maria Shriver, his now ex-wife. And they're there talking, aren't they? And he's like, yeah. And it's obviously an insider joke. They just go, "Don't speak to the National Inquiry," or something like that. He says, "Done," you know, like fucking toddles into the cinema. But then you've got like the baddie at the start of the movie. He looks like, you know, he looks like the Grim Reaper with the bald head, but then you've got the actor who actually plays him, and the people who are interviewing him on the red carpet are there. His agent grabs him. He's like, oh my God. He goes, why would nobody said you used to come in character? But it's actually the movie version of him, and he's getting his fucking weapon ready and all that. There's loads of little things that I really enjoyed about it. Like that, honestly, I don't know what it was, but I'm with you. I think it's well beyond its before its time. Like it really has come out at the wrong time, this sort of movie, because I think it'd be an absolute classic if it had come out a few years later.
Yeah. Like say, if look at Expendables and stuff like that, and all the kind of little nods to the camera, and I guess people are used to the fourth wall breaking a lot more. And yeah, I do. I just think for whatever reason, you know what? The other reason I think it could be as well, there is genuinely a lot of action in this as well. So even though it's like taking the piss, there are a lot of explosions and stunts and what have you, aren't there? So, you know, I don't know whether people were ready for it. They weren't ready to go in. They were sort of expecting the action, like say, just come off the back of T2, one of the best action movies of the early 90s, at least, you know. So, yeah, but it's weird, isn't it, how that watching it back then, you know, sets that sort of expectation in your mind. So I've come into this thinking, yeah, it might be better than I remember. I should give it a proper chance. But then, yeah, it's really ended up enjoying it. And I do think the Ripper, it was fairly sinister, wasn't he? You know, when he's sort of walking around the cinema, I mean, they did well with the makeup and whatever there. And you're sort of thinking he is under threat. And then when you've got, you know, Arnie versus Jack Slater, you know, because Arnie's tackled him. And, you know, I thought that sort of held up pretty well as well. So, yeah, can't say any more really, Chris. I think there's probably no other little bits that I can call out. But, yeah, I think this one's been poorly judged in the past.
Yeah, I agree. I think even like the pretext of when he eventually kills Benedict and he shoots him in the eye, Dave, it was only ever going to be in the eye. But then it explodes and Slate is actually injured. He's bloody. He's actually hurt. You know, we see that when he first comes through the portal where he's like, oh, that actually hurt. And then that crash is quite good where they do the head-on crash and Danny's watching. He's watching that. But I do like the pretense of it. Again, we've got to dispel a little bit of fucking dingy, haven't we? Because he takes him back to the cinema and apparently that's going to take him back in, you know, into the world of the movies. But when he does sort of get him through the door and he's still, you know, covered in blood, but then immediately there's a recovery and all the cops are hugging each other, aren't they? And they're all chatting and then Jack comes in and he's got a scar on his fucking body and he looks massive and he starts having a go at the fucking lieutenant, innie, and he's like, you're just a plot thingy, and he's having a pop at, and then he winks at the camera. Honestly, it's so underrated. I'm so glad Tony's picked this and we've gone back and done it. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this more than I thought. When I thought we'd come into it and just tear it to shreds, and we didn't. You know, the T-1000's there earlier on, everything. Got Sharon Stone, Dave, and basically.
Oh, yeah.
Their favourite shoulder fucking muscle injuries. 35 minutes in, I believe, the first bit of action, Dave. But anyway, and there you go. 37, actually, if we're being accurate. And you can fucking quote me on that as well. That's all I'm going to say. And that's not with Sharon Stone. I think that's with Beth, the partner. But anyway, carry on, Chris. Carry on. Stop talking about you wanking. But no, honestly, Tony's picked a gem for me. I will watch this again. I just think it's so underrated. I love what Arnie does. I love how they do it. And again, it's John McTiernan and Dave obviously did Die Hard, didn't he? He's involved with Shane Black as well. And we've just done Predator, Dave, so we've got another link. Shane Black actually and obviously we've done two Arnie movies back to back, but yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this more than I thought I would.
I do love you. You've nodded to it there, but when he gets shot in the real world and it's life threatening and they realize they've got to bring him back to the movie world, and the doctor's like, this is just a flesh wound. Just absolutely amazing. So like I say, I think going through it again, you know, you'll pick up so many more little nods. I think this is so jam-packed full of those little winks and nods to the camera. But so Chris, shall we get into our final review?
Let's go. go, Dave. Again, Tony, massive thank you, mate. One, for all your support. We really appreciate it. What a way to kick off 2024 as well. A movie that took me completely off guard. I've not had any inkling to even watch this movie in the last 25 years. You know, maybe even 30, Dave. It got 93. Maybe it was 94 I watched it. And that's where it stayed in my VHS collection when I bought it as well. So absolutely enjoyed this. I love the references. If you've not seen it or you don't rate it, I just think as someone, obviously listen to this podcast, but someone who into the sort of movies that we're into, the little pop culture references, little nods. I love things like, I love a good cameo in a movie, Dave. And it just did everything right. All the little things, the plot armor that we watch in our normal movies, whether, you know, the hero can never be killed, even if they've been shot, they get away, you know, they're going to get away. It's all like piss-taked in this. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to put it in Pleasantville, Dave. Absolutely caught me off guard, but thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. So what about yourself?
Yeah, so I think I'm not too far from you at all. So just in terms of being a surprise, in terms of having watched something, normally it's the other way around, isn't it, Chris, where we've watched something as kids and it's like, oh, that's so good. We were talking about Ferris Bueller last week and you go back and you're like, oh, crap, this doesn't hold up at all. Well, this is the opposite, where you've watched it and thought, yeah, I don't really fancy this. And then you come back 20 odd years later and you're like, this is actually amazing. And there's so many bits just all crammed in. And yeah, I will definitely watch this again. We didn't touch on the little Hamlet piece as well. You know, obviously Arnie gets a lot of stick for his acting, and that was a little bit of a dream sequence from Danny, wasn't it? But I love that bit as well, where he's just basically playing Hamlet. But he's got his Uzi in there as well. So, yeah, just amazing. Like you say, all the cameos, all the little nods. You know, did this have an influence on Scream? Gets held up as this great movie, you know, because it's so meta aware and stuff. But this is that as well. The only sort of nitpicks that I have, I think that it's too long. It could have definitely been edited down a little bit. I also think, you know, making it an R rating would have allowed them to get it closer to those action movies that we love, that we know they've been homaging with all these little things. Not sure about the cartoon cat played by Danny DeVito, but, you know, I don't remember those in the action movies, but maybe Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Maybe that was what that was all about. But yeah, so I loved it as well. Definitely, definitely watch it. I'm glad Tony's picked this one. And it's a Pleasantville for me as well. I think not the highest Pleasantville, but definitely, definitely got plenty of rewatchability about it.
Good stuff, mate. Good stuff. So, Dave, it's my pick. Now, do I absolutely nail you to the cross as my first pick of 2024? Bear in mind some of the shockers that I picked and inflicted on myself last year, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to pick a movie, and I'm not happy with you because we had a discussion before we had on the podcast, and you may have actually dropped in there the movie I'm going to do. However, we are completing a John McTiernan hat trick of movies that he's directed, Dave. Now, this one is from 95, right? It was originally going to be a version of Lethal Weapon, Dave, which got rewrote. Then it was going to be called Simon Says, which pretty much gives it away. But we are, my friend, going to be covering the third Die Hard movie, and this one is Die Hard with a Vengeance. So let's get into the trailer. I think it's so underrated, this, you know.
I'm sure you told me it was shit.
Our game.
In the hands of a mastermind of terror.
I want to play a game with Lieutenant McClane.
What kind of game?
Simon says, Dave.
The path to revenge leads straight to John McClane.
If we don't do what this guy says, he's going to blow up another public
place. Why me? What has he got to do with me?
I have no idea. He just said it had to be you.
Nice to be needed.
Simon says, get to the payphone in Wall Street Station by 10:20, or the number 3 train and its passengers are vaporized.
I'm not jumping through hoops for some psycho. That's a white man with white problems. You deal with it.
Where the hell are you going, McClane? I know what I'm doing. Not even God knows what you're doing.
doing?
This guy wants to pound on you till you crumble.
Are you aiming for these people?
No. Well, maybe that mime.
He wants you to dance to his tune and then kill you.
Oh, dear.
Top of the pitch in the New York.
Because I'm white.
Yeah.
I don't like you because you're going to get me killed.
Ah! On May 19th.
This is a bad idea. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a New York police officer. I'm going to ask you to calmly and quietly start moving towards the other end of the car.
When the theater goes dark.
Trust me, guys.
Duck. The roof blows off.
They're setting off bombs. And for some reason, he's very angry with me.
This, as they say, is where the plot thickens.
They knocked over the Federal Reserve.
And it's on Disney, Dave. It's even better.
Oh, nice.
Bruce Willis, Jeremy Irons, Samuel L. Jackson.
Congratulations. You're still alive.
Yippee-ki-yay,
motherfucker.
In a John McTiernan film, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
John McClane, NYPD.
Are you all right?
Yes. Laundry day.
Classic, Dave. A classic, my friend.
You know, more so than the movie, because I'm trying to think, have I ever actually seen this one? I'm not sure I have, but I do remember playing the game. I think it might have been on the Amiga. You know, it was one of those where it was just one of the many games that had copied at the computer club.
Amiga club,
yeah. Yeah, I didn't really play it that often, but I just remember driving around in the taxi and stuff and trying to complete various tasks. But yeah, so interesting for this one. Yep. I don't know what I'm going to make of it, but let's see.
So massive thank you again, Tony, for picking this one, mate. Really, really pleased with that because it's gone off my list as well. I hope you enjoy next week, everyone, because it's a classic. John McClane is back. But also, if you want to support us, get over to patreon.com/thevhsstrikesback. If you want to email us, thevhsstrikesback@gmail.com. Now, Dave, I do believe, before we do Roll Call of Honor, we've had a review on our podcast.
We have, Chris, and it's another one. And, you know, you talk about things that are meta-aware and little winks to the camera and stuff and things that are familiar. So we got a review through on our UK store, and it's not a great one, Chris. It starts off, subject, not sure. It says, it's a two-star review, this one, and it says, just a couple of blokes talking about movies while going on a transgression most of the time on subjects completely unrelated to the film discussed. And I thought, okay, brilliant. I mean, apart from the score, I wouldn't have been able to tell if that was good or bad because he's kind of nailed us there. But but I thought, that name rings a bell. His handle is Anahom. I thought, I'm sure I've heard that before. And yeah, so I had added another review a few months ago. I'm sure it was around the time that we did, what was the movie? The one with Rona Mitra. Beowulf.
Got it at the same time.
Yeah, so it was around about that time. And so I thought, right, let's have a quick look back. And sure enough, Chris, it was about 9 months ago. Subject, not sure. 2-star review. And it says, I recently found this podcast and I was pleased as a UK resident. It was good to hear something from the UK. But the critical analysis of some of the films is just ridiculous. Fucking rubbish is a popular term to define some films.
That's me.
you can come out with better terminology than this, I'm sure. Now, I thought, Chris, this might be a fairly momentous occasion because I think we might have discovered our first troll. Because I don't know about you, but if you listen to a podcast or something and you're like, yeah, it's not really for me, and you kind of move on, So fair enough. You know, if someone wants to take out the time to write up a review, we're always going to read it out and then, you know, slate us. Well, that is fine. But to actually come back, I don't know if this guy is like a regular listener or, you know, he's just put a note in his calendar. You know, I'll give it a few months and then I'm going to come back and lambast these fuckers again. Don't know what it is. But yeah, first troll, Chris.
Well, to be fair, Dave, we don't just use terminology like, you know, this is fucking rubbish, because I use that terminology. However, I also use another bit of terminology, Dave, and I'll tell you what I would say, Dave. Suck my fucking balls. There you go. That's another bit of terminology. Put that in your fucking hat. We have a troll. Tremendous work. Tremendous work. Fucking brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. But yeah, no, honestly, I'm not joking.
Sorry.
I was just going to say,
so if you do want to drop us a review, to either praise us, lambast us, somewhere in between, all good. Just stick it on Apple Podcasts and we'll read it out.
Yeah, no, and joking aside, the fact that someone has taken the time to actually do a review, even if it's a negative one, we love that. We love it when someone's taking the piss out of us as well, so... Thank you anyway for doing that. And I'd take that as a bit of a compliment, because someone's actually bothered to use their own time to listen to me and you, Dave. So brilliant. It's obviously one of my...
And write up twice.
Yeah, twice. Oh, fucking brilliant. But anyway, thank you again, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. As we kick off 2024 with a classic, in my mind, anyway. And we're going with my pick next week of Die Hard with a Vengeance. Dave, what are you going to take us out with today?
Well, Chris, it's got to be a crappy Arnie impression, hasn't it, to finish off? And this is Jack Slater in response to Danny saying, I thought I was going to die. And Jack says, well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you're going to enjoy all the glorious fruits life has got to offer. Acne, shaving, premature ejaculation, and your first divorce. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks to all our listeners out there, and we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now?
What are we going to do? Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back. Because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's not.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Get to the chopper!
One ring to go.
All right.
Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't nothing.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid
fool. Yeah, maybe you're stupid.
You're
ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you in 6 months. Oh,
I must break you.